Okay, and first presentation here is what is required to have success with rain-fed skip row corn. I myself, Robert Klein, Drew Lyon, David Balzenberger, Alex Provista, Charles Shapiro, Steve Knezovic, Stephen Mason, Lennis Nelson, Mark Menards, Roger Elmore, Alan Slagle, Merle Virgil, Norm Klucke, and Steve Melvin are all co-authors. You might wonder why we had so many co-authors on that. One of the things is we wanted to learn about this as fast as we can, a lot of different environments. And we say in Nebraska, we have as much difference across Nebraska from eastern Nebraska to the western Nebraska. And we go from about 34 to 14 inches as there is from eastern Nebraska to the east coast. So we figured by getting people all the way across the state and even Kansas and Colorado involved in this, we could learn about this and if this was a viable system to look at. And now we have several years of it. And when I really got interested in the skip row system, it was kind of by accident. In 2002, it was drier than any year in the 30s in our area. And a sorghum breeder in Lincoln asked me to plant some new sorghum hybrids out in our area. And I said, send them out. We'll put them with our equal fallow corn and sorghum plot over in Hays County. Well, as I mentioned, it was drier than any year in the 30s, and I don't think there was any rain-fed or dry land crop production in Hays County that year, except a little bit of sorghum in my equifallow corn and sorghum plot. Not the regular one, but actually in this hybrid one that the breeder asked me to plant for him. Where did it happen? Well, it happened where we had missing rows because some of the hybrids weren't adapted at all, and so we didn't have viable stands. And I just, in reviewing that, wherever we had missing rows, we would have some good sorghum in the next row. So I thought, with Roundup Ready corn, you know, we can control the weeds, so we should give that a try. And that's basically when we got started in this procedure. And we have had several years of drought in western Nebraska. In North Platte area, we've been picking up the last couple years on rainfall, doing quite a bit better. But as you go west, we still have a drought. This is Lake McConaughey. Kind of at this time, it set an all-time record for being the lowest it ever was a couple years ago. This shows one of the other reservoirs, and if you're a boater, it's just a little bit hard to unload your boat using that boat ramp there, I think. I don't know a whole lot about that, but I think it's... This is a slide we put on, how much water does it take? You know, this is before you get that first bushel of grain. And as you go out here on wheat, I got one started here at 4 inches, and I also got one starting at 10 inches. Quite a bit of difference in that particular one. And of course, some of the other crops start at 7 out here, grain, sorghum. Here's where corn starts at 10. But why such a big difference on wheat? Well, this is our wheat variety plot that we harvested this year, and this is what it looked like on October 27th. It was no-tilled into corn residue after a fallow period, and pretty good wheat. Right across the road, a plot that was planted much, much earlier, the farmer actually grazed this thing out, and it had so many diseases and so forth, and quite a difference in what our plot look like and what theirs. And so make this system really work good in our area. You need to grow that good winter wheat crop. In fact, this is our average for the plot this year at 75 bushel. This is 2002. I mentioned drier than any year in the 30s at North Platte. This is what one of the cornfields looked like, not ours, but to one of the growers. And you can see not a lot of residue in there. And only place where there's a little area, still didn't produce ears in those areas, but you'd see a little green in some of those areas, but nothing there to harvest at all. And as you well know, when does corn need soil water? From the silking, the blister stage, doesn't it? Very, very critical to have moisture there. And this is some work that Norm Klucke started at North Platte and now is in Garden City, Kansas doing it, and where he irrigates twice weekly and once a week, and then has corn stover and wheat stubble as the residue in the field. Bare soil, the E, evaporation, accounted for, as we look at that, 32% where it's irrigated once a week. That's on bare soil. 35% where it's irrigated twice. Of the ET, 35% of it was evaporation. Just to save time, we'll go over here to the wheat stubble, and where we irrigate once a week, have good infiltration, and can irrigate once a week. You know, we actually take that from, like, if we didn't have good infiltration, had to irrigate twice a week, from 35 to 15%. So that's 20% less crop water use. And if you say your crop water use is like 24 to 27 inches for fully irrigated corn area, well, that's what, about 5 inches of water. And so that can really make a big difference if you can really reduce that E in ET. The whole key, I think, to our skip row system then is residue management. Okay, this shows one of the skip row fields at Madrid, Nebraska. This person did basically everything I wanted to see how it was done, did a good job with it. He planted about the right plant population I wanted. The only thing is, I don't really like these tracks in here. And of course, that's the other plant units that are drug on. The other thing is, I want to see us move to narrow gauge wheels. Why was the wide gauge wheels on most of the planters? Just plant in tilled ground, right? The more residue we can keep standing, the longer it lasts. And so I'd rather have them pull off those planting units. I know we got to start someplace, and getting the guys just to try it at the beginning is good. But I'd like to equip our planters with narrow gauge wheels from a drill, and most of them were bolt right on. More residue we can keep standing in that field, the longer it lasts, this will be a real advantage. This is what the corn was in that. It averaged 100 bushel, or right in the row, it's like, you know, 200 bushel, but the farmer said that was really fun, and seeing that corn come up that those rows, because it's like harvesting irrigated corn. Of course, you just got half the rows that are that way. This is some work in 2005 at Trenton. We have three plant populations, 10, 15, and 20,000, and this is the average yield for all that. And this is planted in 30-inch rows, what we call solid. 57 bushel, 57 bushel, and 44 bushel at the higher plant population, or we average 53. These are the yields for the plant to skip one at the 10, 15, and 20. So, you know, in those rows like this, we're planting 15,000, 22,500, and 30,000 because we want to keep the same plant population per acre. 69, 66, 57, averaged of 63, or basically 10 bushel better with the skip row system. Now, basically, I think we'd say in a number of years' experience that anything time 90 bushel or less, we probably ought to be looking at the plant to skip to and plant instead of the plant to skip one. Here are yields. We're 67, 73, 84, and 74. In other words, we came up with 21 bushel better in that particular system. What we really, really gain is at the high plant population. It doesn't seem to hurt us so much if we exceed the plant population in the skip row system, especially in the plant to skip one. Now, it does, you know, hurt us in the plant to skip two, but does hurt us in plant to skip one. But this seems to be a big advantage. I was just talking to somebody this morning about should have had the higher plant population some of these years to take advantage of the good rainfall we've had the last couple years and so forth. Well, if you do that, it doesn't seem to hurt you so much in the plant to skip to. And we is going to average 74 versus 53. And then this is the plant one, skip one. And it's same plant populations per row, only we're skipping every other row, 61, 70, 68, and 66. This is kind of yields that would be typical out in our area. That's why I kind of put in, can be an average yield. But I think the interesting thing, whatever skip row system you used, it was better than the conventional. Now, this is at South Central Ag Lab. This will be close to the Hastings area. The Clay Center is where it actually was. And this is some 2006 data. Excellent rainfall, pretty timely rainfall that year. And they had three different regimes they used, the 15,000, 22,500, and 30,000 in the solid. And this was the yields, 138, 163, 165, and an average of 155 in the plant to skip one. And that's what we'd recommend. We didn't think you could go up on these higher plant populations. They did have good winter wheat stubble that they planted in, and I think that's really the big key. 149, 183, 190, and average 174, 19 bushel better by using the skip row system. In general, we kind of think that the yields are equal till we get up to 160 bushel, but it does look like in this particular case we even beat it much higher. This is what we look like at McCook this year. We had some good rainfall and so forth, and we just harvested this and got some good yields on it. We haven't got all this summarized for this year. This is kind of interesting to see some of the farmers' comments and so forth. This is Marty Scher at Maywood. Planting skip row corn greatly increased the consistency of raising a profitable dryland crop without sacrificing yield potential. It allows the crop to keep thriving when summertime rains are less than timely. And of course, he goes on to say, our biggest hurdle, though, is still crop insurance, and we haven't got that solved yet. Skip row corn, another comment from out in the Chapel area. It's a program that really works. And then here's another with limited moisture you've been getting. Been about to raise corn. We can reduce the corn plant population. The big key, though, is residue, crop residue. I don't even like to see it where we don't have good crop residue. This was in a field, and the guy the year before, and we'll go into more, here's another part of the field. But this part of the field, the person had corn, equal fallow corn, or corn planted in wheat stubble. He was sure that half of the field, because it was planted to a longer season hybrid, wouldn't make it before frost, and so he harvested for silage. The other part he harvested for grain and then planted corn, the same hybrid, all the way across the field the next year. There was good corn in here where they harvested for grain. Don't even recommend the system without good crop residue. Here's another case, you know, as you look at it here, and the water intake, you have, to me, the benefits of long-term no-till to get these real good infiltration rates. I really like controlled traffic. This is in controlled traffic, but this is conventional. The intake rate per hour, 0.2 inch, this is east of Lincoln. In the soft rows with conventional tillage, this would be a couple of diskings. It's still less than 0.5 inch, but look what it is here with long-term no-till in the soft rows. And so I really like no-till with controlled traffic. And you can just see that same rain. This was the adjoining field, and it all soaked in. Shows you more of the effects of residue. Here we were evaluating some of our equal fallow corn plots and so forth and counting the stalks like you do. She was right here, and now she moved over here. And that's the way it was all the way through the field. You know, and what's the difference here? Well, this is the big difference between those two, yeah, is the residue. And some of the things that are most interesting is what farmers comment about. Here a farmer and his brother-in-law were flying over one of the fields, and they couldn't figure out why half the field was a lot greener than the other half. They landed and went over the field, and this is what it looked like. It was greener, and what wasn't as green, it looked like this. What's the difference? Yeah. Here they left the straw spreader on to spread the straw. Here they took the spruce spreader out, and a pretty good yield for, you know, in our area, 97 bushel, but it cost him 20 bushels per acre to take that straw spreader off and bale that windrow straw. This is what we're telling people on this, to not sell their straw to mix with the tiller's grain. And you gotta have good weed control, and it's really, really critical. Here's a good example of how weeds can affect you. They didn't do a good job of spreading the straw in this field. So the farmer figured out he could never plant through it, so he took a disc and disc it, and then put a herbicide treatment on it, and where he had good residue left behind the combine, it controlled the weeds. And this really shows up in this one. This is some work Gail Wicks did a few years ago, where he had zero residue, he had 125,000 weeds per acre, and where he had like 60 bushel wheat, 6,000 pounds of residue, he had just one-fifth as many weeds. And then this is with the herbicide, and a half rate of dual was as good as almost a full rate where you had some residue. So it's really critical. Again, if you don't have residue, and this was from Grant a few years ago, you don't have any corn, you don't have any sunflower, here was a person who had some good residue. You look down there, this is corn after corn in that same area. He had a good crop. So you really got to make sure that you have that. And I really like the stripper header, and that can really help. And I think with that, we're about out of time.